Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you. Good morning, good morning. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, except with the safe distancing, I'm recording from home. And today, Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon is going to be sharing information about June. June is Indigenous Peoples Month, Father's Day. It's also Pride Month. And we have as our special guest, members of QWERKY, the Queer Imaging and Writing Collective for Elders. So without further ado, I'm going to take you into that meeting and you will hear Don Morton telling us about QWERKY.
Well, hi everyone. I'm Don Morton. I'm a member of QWERKY. QWERKY is the Queer Imaging and Writing Collective for Elders. There's 22 of us in the group, and we are 55 years of age or older. Most of us are over 65, and this is our 15th year. We've been going since 2006. The group is hosted by Britannia Community Center, and for most of that 15 years, we've been meeting at Britannia Community Center. But since COVID, since last March 2020, we've been Zooming, and we do that online now. Every week, we get together for 2 hours, and we check in with each other. We talk about contemporary issues, and we do. We are writers and image producers, so we work on memoir and fiction. We produce cartoons. We do other images, videos, plays, and we use our time together in small groups, where we work in smaller groups. There's one on fiction, one on memoir, and one on producing zines. So we, in these small groups, we read the works that we produce and we give feedback. We've done 8 books and 3 zines. We produced a series of public service announcements on elder abuse several years ago. And our latest anthology was published last year. It's called Together We Stand, Queer Elders Speak Out. And we'll tell you a little bit more about that later.
I like the idea about speaking out. When you speak to each other, is the group always harmonious, or do you have times some people may have different opinions about things you're going to speak out about?
Well, usually not different opinions of what we need to speak up about, but different opinions about what we might want to say. So, but most of us are political and have been political for most of our adult lives. So generally we tend to want to make a political stand on issues.
Yeah, we're old activists. We've been around since the beginning of the LGBTQ rights movement, and where a lot of us were the founders of it and did a lot of the work on it. So we've been organizers for a long, long time, and we're active in community organizations. We have sort of rules about how we interact with each other in the group, and we are respectful and we let people state their opinions and that kind of thing. So, yeah.
That and sounds like if the world could operate that way, it would be a happier place.
Yeah, I was going to say the other thing is we always attempt to make decisions based on consensus. So that's been one of our marks since the beginning. And so that tends to reduce conflict. Because if everybody can buy into, not necessarily totally agree, but everybody can buy into and live with the decision that we make, it's a much easier way to move forward.
Yeah.
Yes.
And basically how we do that is, can you live with this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, in hearing your different voices, I know your voice, Chris and Belle, but maybe will you just briefly introduce yourself to our listeners?
Okay. My name is Val Innes, and I'm part of the Zine Group in Corky, and I've been a member since 2006.
I'm Chris Morrissey, and I'm part of the Pan Memoir Group, and I was one of the people, well, I was the person in my day job who actually was able to get this group up and off the ground and running. It's been kept together by lots of different people, but we began under the auspices of Arts, Health, and Seniors out of the Vancouver Parks Board.
And I've, as I said, I'm Don Martin. I am one of the newer members. I joined in 2016. I'm also a member of the PAM Memoir Group. But the three of us are part of the coordinating committee for the larger group. There's six people on the coordinating committee, so.
And I would say there's something that we mentioned at the beginning. This is Indigenous Peoples Month, History Month, and Heritage Month. And I want to gratefully acknowledge that our work at CJSF takes place on the unceded territories of the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh people. Are there other nations where either of your work take place?
I'm speaking from White Rock, which is on the unceded territory of the Coast Salish, specifically the Semiahmoo people.
And around that word unceded, you know, we say it lots of times, and now a lot of questions are coming up regarding reconciliation and land rights. What does unceded mean for anyone who does not know, who's just heard the word, but what does that mean to you?
When white people came into British Columbia, by the time they had reached British Columbia, they basically gave up doing treaties and just took the land. So this is basically stolen land.
Yeah, so
that
there's
unceded.
You know, in other parts of North America, there have been treaties with Indigenous people, but there's no agreement about who owns what here. and the assumption is that until there's some kind of a decision about that, it's really owned by the First Nations, and so they haven't ceded any of it to British Columbia.
However, even though that is the truth, the way things happen is as if the Crown owns the land. And so we have these two governments, one that really does have history and right to the land, and the other one, the Government of Canada, which has imposed itself and set up organizations and organized the country in ways that they see fit.
And I know that Corky has been supportive of other organizations, even within the umbrella that represents Pride. Can you tell us a bit about the history of Pride movement, the development of the flag?
Sure. What I know, I mean, I came from the U.S. I spent most of my adult life in the U.S. and have been a LGBTQ activist since the early 70s. The contemporary movement started with the riots at the Stonewall Inn in New York City in 1969. And so there were several weeks of demonstrations, and out of that grew the gay liberation movement, and from there it spread. And so the Pride celebration usually to celebrate that event of the rebellion at Stonewall Inn.
And from the Canadian point of view, I will add that that in May of 1969, the Canadian government introduced legislation decriminalizing sexual orientation. And on June 28th, the day before Stonewall, the legislation was ratified and given royal assent. So that's the early days of the Canadian-based process.
And with the flag, you know, in another program last week, you had the flag and you talked about what it meant, because we see the colors. What are the meanings of the colors?
So first I want to say that the Pride flag over time has evolved, just like our community has evolved. Initially, the flag was put together by Gilbert, his last name escapes me, who designed the flag in San Francisco. And it originally had the same colors, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and purple, but also included hot pink and turquoise. But it turned out that the hot pink and turquoise fabric was very difficult to get, so they very soon got dropped out of the flag. So for the longest time, the flag has been the red, which represents life, orange, which is for healing, yellow for sunlight, green for nature, blue for harmony, and purple for spirit. And then more recently, there has been further adaptations of the flag to incorporate groups of people who have been more marginalized. And so we have a brown and a black stripe in the form of a chevron, and the pink and the blue, which represents trans folks. And there's a little piece of white that's inclusive of those who have died of AIDS. So it is a work in progress. And of course, there's a fair amount of controversy over what that looks like. But these days, the majority of people who work in social justice issues are incorporating those additional colors.
And that seems related to your evolution of magazines, to where you have a specific issue that's just come out and it's dealing with Black Lives Matter and also dealing with stopping racist acts, hate crimes. How did that come about?
A small group of us decided that we wanted to be able to write on topics that we felt we should write about. And so we started with a zine on COVID-19 and living with COVID-19. And very soon after doing that, we decided the next one was going to be fighting racism. And the third one that we had decided on, I don't know if this is what we're going to do at this point, because again, it'll be consensus on that, going to be climate change and what should be happening around climate change. And all of this, of course, is written from a queer perspective, because we're queer. So, and we feel that we've got things to say about that. We certainly wound up having a lot to say about the anti-racism situation, because we have turned out a zine that has at the moment 60 pages including a 6-page section of resources and references for people.
Go ahead, Val.
No, go ahead, Chris.
I think one of the things that we struggle with is we are queer writers, and like many queers, we don't always write about queer things. Mm. The thing is that we are queer. That's who we are. And we also have connections to, because of our history of oppression, we also have connection to other social justice issues, particularly where oppression is involved. And so it's that combination of being queer and coming out of our own history and our own lived experience as being an oppressed group of people, that we then become writers about other, and we have insight into other experiences of oppression. And that's sometimes what we write about.
Yeah, I think it's very laudable, because some groups do just stay contained within their particular background or their particular heritage and not look at the similarities or how a united front is stronger or better than just individual groups pushing for changes in society, pushing for acceptance of, you know, pushing to just make the world a better place. So I think you're going to have or share some readings from that e-zine, but I wanted to ask a question first. The zine, I have a picture in my mind of what a zine is. Could you tell us what do you mean by a zine?
A collection of writing and images and so on that isn't quite a book yet, smaller. And initially I intended to make this look sort of like a chat book, but it got to be so big that we kept it so an 8.5 by 11 size. And so that will be printed by Community and stapled. And we'll have the cover, I hope, and a different stock and size, but it will handle like a magazine. So it'll be like that, only in color.
I see. And I was picturing digital, because I think in my mind I was seeing easy, like an ebook, that it's an electronic document.
Well, it will be as well.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It'll be in a PDF, and that can be sent anywhere in the world to anyone who wants to read it. So Community will distribute the actual paper copies, and I guess so will Quirky, but the e-version, which will be exactly the same as the printed one, except just not on paper.
How can people get in touch with you, and how can they get the publication?
They can contact me, I guess. And we can do it through Facebook, right, Don?
Ah, there we are. Together We Stand, Queer Elders Speak Out, from the publisher Lulu.com. People's Co-op Bookstore, Little Sisters Book and Art Emporium, and your favorite bookstore. Then Fighting Racism from a Queer Perspective, look for Zine Info on Facebook.
Thank you.
So is that facebook.com? Is it a private group, or you just?
It's a membership group, but you can just go search for Quirky on Facebook, and it will come up, and you can see what's there. We don't have a website. It's been very difficult for us to try to maintain a website. So the Facebook group is the best thing that we have right now. The title, Together We Stand, Queer Elders Speak Out, is the book, of course. And that's available in a lot of different ways. But the zine is going to be a little bit harder to distribute except electronically. So, if you want to get in touch with us, probably through the Facebook page or group.
Okay, and then spell it for people who won't see our in studio screen.
What about through Britannia?
Yeah, you could also contact us through Britannia, although that's going to be a little circuitous. But Quirky, do you want to spell Quirky? Is that what you're asking?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So it's Q-U-I-R-K apostrophe or hyphen E. Q-U-I-R-K hyphen E.
Okay, hyphen or dash. Quirky. And just in the Facebook search, you would put that name in the Facebook search, and then it would take you to your group.
It should. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then is there an email address people can write to if they're having difficulty getting it?
Val, what about the email for the zine?
I don't have it at the moment. I'm okay. Sorry. I should have had that handy, but I don't. They could contact me. My email is INNES.VAL@gmail.com.
Okay. So now, which of your books or publications are you going to read from first?
Who's reading first? We didn't decide on that.
No, we didn't.
Well, just pick one.
Okay, I will read from the zine, and it's a review. Give me a moment to find it. There we go. It's a review of a book called White Rage, The Unspoken Truth of Our Racial Divide by Carol Anderson. And this is, if you are going to read only one book about racism in the United States, make it this one. It should be required reading in the wake of the George Floyd murder and the rise of Black Lives Matter. It is a gripping, factual, and thoroughly sourced account of how white supremacist governments, courts, police, and education have systemically, consistently, and deliberately undermined racial equality and civil rights for Black people in the United States as a whole, but especially in the Southern states. Carol Anderson, professor and chair of African American Studies at Emory University, writing with clarity, grace, and deliberation, delivers facts backed by a full 99 pages of sources to make her case. It's a harrowing account of what white rage does when faced with Black achievement to undermine any pretense of democracy. As Newkirk from the Washington Post comments, quote, Anderson convincingly shows that African Americans' economic and social progress has historically and sometimes ferociously been reversed, end quote. I found it hard to read as it continually moved me to gut-wrenching anger as it spoke the truth with fact after sickening fact about the racial divide in the United States and how it has been maintained. Hard, but immensely worthwhile. It also made clear to me why 74 million Americans voted in 2020 for an openly racist, white supremacist president. Anderson, as Newkirk further comments, presents, quote, a sobering primer on the myriad ways African American resilience and triumph over enslavement, Jim Crow, and intolerance have been relentlessly defied by the very institutions entrusted to uphold our democracy. End quote. Along the way, as you read White Rage, you'll learn facts about, for example, Lincoln, Johnson, Nixon, Reagan, various district and Supreme Court decisions and reasons behind the war on drugs, along with American involvement in Nicaragua, that will likely change your perception of them completely. It's a sordid, shameful, and racist history. Anderson added an afterword to her book in 2017, discussing how to diffuse the power of white rage and move into, quote, a future where the right to vote is unfettered by discriminatory restrictions that prevent millions of American citizens from having any say in their own government, end quote. Disenfranchisement of Black Americans has been one of the most powerful tools of white oppression of Black people since the Civil War. Anderson says now is the time to rethink America. This is the moment now when all of us, Black, white, Latino, Native American, must step out of the shadow of white rage, deny its power, understand its unseemly goals, and choose a different future. This book is a call to action, and it is compelling. And that's in the zine.
Yes. For you, in reading the book, did you find implications for Canada?
We have our own sordid, shameful history in terms of Indigenous people and also Black people. So I don't think that white rage is all that different here, particularly in terms of Indigenous people, but it's perhaps not quite so obvious.
How do you think that, you know, for the reader, does it give a reader more compassion, more knowledge? What do you expect, you know, in reviewing the book, how do you think it might affect a reader?
I think it'll, if they're right, if they're reading that book, they're going to be open to what it says. And I think it's going to make them angry and really sad. But it's also going to, it's going to give them an enormous amount of information with which to argue the point. And I think that's really, really useful. The way that the book outlines the war on drugs, for example, particularly under Ronald Reagan, that was completely new information to me and really sobering. Because the American government wouldn't fund at that point, Congress wouldn't fund what Reagan wanted to do in terms of Black people, he got involved in the getting drugs up into the United States. Read about it.
Yeah, I lived through that experience of being in Detroit when they just pumped drugs and guns into the city and did a lot to just break the Black Power movement. In fact, it was very painful. It was one of the reasons I moved to Canada. It was just so painful seeing that he and J. Edgar Hoover and the COINTELPRO program could work to break a movement, but also literally put so many drugs in so many urban areas and then arrest people. So sometimes people say, oh, Black and brown people, you know, they're more criminal. Look at how many in jail, without looking at what's the reason for the mass incarceration and how the government was involved in setting it up. So what did you think, Chris and Adan, about how that book, you know, what benefit it might have for the reader?
Well, like Val says, I think one of the things is it's because the United States has been such a powerful force, and Canada being a neighbor is often influenced. Canadians are often influenced by what we hear in the news and what we see happens in the United States. It's interesting that many Canadians know a lot more about the United States than Americans know about Canada. And so I think it helps Canadians to have some reflection. I know for me, for example, this whole more recent movement with Black Lives Matter and the killing of a number of the public information about the killing of so many African Americans has sort of led me to, first of all, learn a bit about what happened with Black people in Canada, but it's also led me to reflect on what is the predominant, what I think is the predominant area of oppression in Canada, which is looking at First Nations, the history of our First Nations people. And so the whole movement, while it has a great deal of, while it grows really out of the experience of the United States, has an impact and an influence because oppression works the same, regardless of who the group is that's being oppressed. And so I think it enables Canadians to take a look at our history and our experience rather than just be looking south of the border.
This week, with the revelation of the 215 children's remains that were found around one of the residential schools, understanding that how a practice could just be going on and people could ignore it. And that even now, you know, the Pope refusing to just apologize, you know, to just say, well, maybe the Church of Canada should do something, rather than seeing that this was a practice that was occurred under their shield, under their guidance. And some of the stories that people have been telling about how it's affected their lives, we have this blame the victim type of consciousness. And I think the blame the victim type of attitude that's prevailed in Canada, the U.S., that book helps people maybe to identify if they might be one of the people blaming the people, blaming Black people, red people, you know, people of other people who, somebody said BIPOC is everyone other than white. So I think that blame, it helps people to see this is part of the behavior to look at and blame the victim. And the news revealed that Canada actually has more white supremacist organizations who have contributed to this hate literature and have contributed to the superior concept, white superiority as a privilege, that Canada has more. And that's something people don't really know or would think about, because usually Canada is lifted up as the opposite to the United States. There's this bad place here, there's this good place here. We love people, we respect people. And I think, you know, reading that book might help people challenge. If you see the behavior, it doesn't matter the country. If it happens here, then it's wrong here, and, you know, provides some place, a platform for discussion. You know, we need more opportunities to discuss things rather than banging people over the head. I think, you know, you're including that review in the book makes it possible for people to have more productive discussions around these issues of racism.
Well, one of the things that I just want to add to this is, you know, making the Indigenous people disappear one way or the other was part of colonization in Canada. The first book to have at the first social studies book, I was a teacher, so, and I worked in a school that was not a residential school, but 97% of the students were First Nations. So none of this is a surprise to me, because I've been, hearing these stories for a long time. But the first social studies book to have anything in there about colonization, about Indigenous people that hadn't to do with them as noble savages, came out in 1986, the last residential school to close in Saskatchewan, actually, was 1996. This is not something long ago. There are people still alive who went through this system. And that's four generations of having your children stolen for 12 years, mostly, and come back not able to speak the language, and not knowing the community, not knowing the values, not knowing the culture. Is it any surprise that a lot of people are broken?
Right.
And the part that I want to have a part in is, as a queer person, I know damn well the public pressure makes a difference. It can make change happen. And I want to be any part of public pressure that I can be to make this change. Canada's racist, and particularly racist about Indigenous people, and it's completely undeserved. I'm sorry, I tend to get emotional about this, but
No, it's absolutely the truth. And what really bothers me, when you reading the stories of the Underground Railroad and reading how receptive Canada was as a place, but then interviewing people, I've interviewed some people, you know, young Black high school, recent graduates, and they were talking about recent, you know, still in their recent 2000, you know, since the year 2000, some have graduated since then, going to schools where they heard nothing about their culture, where their hair was made fun of, that there's been a decline in acceptance of Black History Month. People have made people in some schools say, oh, well, if you think we should do something, what do you think we should do? Not having resource books. People are talking of people. Last month was Asian Heritage Month, and some people from India and Pakistan have made great contributions to Canada, but it's not in the books. In the books, none of the people, the brown, Black, and Indigenous people who have contributed to building the shipping industry, the canning industry, manufacturing industry, they don't exist. So it makes all of these groups look like, oh, you are just interlopers, you are visitors here, you're not really Canadian. And people being told to go back where they came from, whose families were parts of the people who, you know, who built the community. So I think that again, the book by identifying behaviors where people can begin to see, well, maybe those behaviors weren't just that bad country next door. Those things are things that are happening in Canada and move to stop it. You know, and so I think what you're saying, being queer, understanding what it is to be maligned, understand what it means to have laws set up to prevent you from doing things, to put you in a position to stand shoulder to shoulder with other groups who've experienced the same thing.
One of the things that is part of Canada's history is the whole issue around Chinese, how the Chinese men were brought here to build the railway, and then we're not allowed to bring families, and then the imposition of the head tax. And then there's the whole Japanese internment during the Second World War. There's been the Komagata Maru boat that brought people from Southeast Asia that was not allowed to, that wasn't allowed to land, that was sent back. And even in our own time, the boats that came from Bangladesh were many of those people, if they were allowed to land, were detained and then returned back home. So it's a bit complex in the sense that we have this basic issue of the relationship that white people in Canada have with First Nations, but we also have a history where clearly there's discrimination and oppression of other groups of people, and clearly they're all people who are not white, have had the same experience. So I think it's important for Canadians to realize that that we have our own challenges around racism. I have a piece here that I'd like to read, that talks a little bit about something that's a much more recent manifestation of racism, and it's very much connected to COVID-19. It's a piece that's called Fear Overturned and written by Ellen Woodsworth. I'm ripped out of my deep sleep by thoughts of my partner, who is of Asian descent, being attacked as we walk lovingly hand in hand along the Fraser River. I fantasize grabbing a stick and attacking him. I can't go back to sleep as I realize the terror deep inside me that she will be attacked by a racist. I think of the impact of racism that spews out of the mouths of the most powerful people in the world, sending it around the world. COVID-19 spreads racism far more virulent than the disease, and there is no vaccine yet, for the poorest, most racialized countries in the world. The intersections of colonialism, racism, homophobia, and sexism are violently attacking Indigenous, Black, Asian, and other people of color. The systemic deep disease surges forth in manic magnitude, as unforeseen as it is devastating to friends and family. It rips apart societies already weakened by COVID-19. It rides on the tidal waves of an economic collapse that has stripped especially racialized women of their full-time and part-time jobs. The government, AI, military industrial complex, and fossil fuel companies join hands to enormously profit on the crisis. Two-spirit LGBTQIA are forced to live with homophobic families or in shelters or in tents or on the streets with nowhere to run as the shelters are full. Wish is begging for funding for clean socks and underpants as sex trade workers can't work and are not eligible for any supports because their work is not considered work. Housing is prohibitively expensive, so those who are being attacked, raped, and killed are forced to stay in their single room occupancy hotel rooms, apartments, and homes in beautiful BC. My queer, racialized, and Indigenous brothers and sisters face this and more. And the article goes on, and I'm not going to read the rest of it. Anybody who wants to, I'm going to read the last part. Anybody who's interested in reading the in-between part needs to get the zine and read that. Ellen continues, I read statements in the Georgia Strait and in Facebook warning us that to be safe from COVID-19, we must be cautious about being in the streets at a protest. Yes, we must respect social distancing and wear masks, but we are not safe in our homes or in public from racist, homophobic, or sexist violence. We are safe when we come out into the streets in the thousands, stand up publicly together, and make sure we are heard. No return to normal. If there's one thing we queers know, it is that normal does not include us. If we don't act now, the right wing, inside and outside of government, will just take over, take our taxpayer-funded government money, and silence our call for a new green, intersectional feminist world that includes all of us. Last night, I joined the Orange Rally to express grief and rage at the discovery of the 215 children's bodies in the Kamloops Catholic Residential School. And we all know there are thousands more yet to be found across Canada. The Native Women's Association of Canada launched their call for action on missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls inquiry recommendations. Because of the work of a Haida Two-Spirit lesbian from the downtown East Side in Vancouver, the recommendations include Two-Spirit LGBTQIA are embedded throughout the report. Today, I feel like the world has erupted with a second wave of another powerful social movement, and there is a sense of a new world coming. Life does not go on in a straight line, but on a queer day, we can see forever.
Nice indeed. Who was that article by?
Ellen Woodsworth.
She's a member of Quirky and a former city council person.
So we have these wonderful readings. We have a powerful organization. Again, we want to tell people how to get in touch with you. The magazine, and when they said zine, I was picturing the electronic magazine, and it will be available digitally, but it's also available in print. And tell the places again that you can get it in print.
From community. What's the address of that, Dawn? Do you know?
1170 Butte Street.
Thank you. Okay.
So it's a bookstore?
No, it's the LGBTQ community center. It's called Q-munity, pretty well known organization, and they're the ones that are funding the printing of the zine.
Okay, and say the address once more.
1170 Butte Street, which is just half a block off of Davie in the Davie Village in the West End.
Okay.
And also, you know, people want to find it online. We don't have a plan. It's not printed yet. It's not completely finished yet, but we don't have a plan for distributing it. But one place it will be available will be on the Facebook group. So just, you know, go to Facebook and search for Quirky, Quirk-E.
Yes, love the dash. Okay, well, I have read the zine and find it's really powerful. It is something that for anyone to read and just have your consciousness increased and your determination to combine with others, the power of one group working with another group instead of a kind of colonial thing has been to set groups apart, to make this one think this one doesn't like you, that one doesn't like you, the tall one doesn't like the short one, dark one doesn't like the light one, and keep a lot of confusion. So I think one of the things is, I know that your group also works intergenerationally. Didn't you work with a group with the float?
Youth for a Change, we worked with on the elder abuse, and we are going to be working with them again.
And we also, I wasn't involved in it, but there was a textbook that was written on, it's called Basically Queer, that was a joint project with Youth for a Change and Quirky.
And there it is.
Oh, Basically Queer, very nice. And speaking of joy, what are some of your favorite musicians? Or do you find that queer musicians as a group are getting more airplay, or who are some of your favorites?
Heather Bishop is one of my favorites.
I am open and I am willing, for to be hopeless would seem so strange. It dishonors those who go before us. So lift me up to the light of change. There is a hurting in my family, and across the nation, and there is wailing the whole world. to be hopeless would seem so strange. It dishonors those who go before us. So
I was living in Winnipeg at the time, so, and one of my sort of weird memories is going into Hudson Bay Company, into their record place, to buy a copy of Lavender Jane Loves Women. I was pretty naive at the time.
The other one who's been really involved in social movements, she's an American whose name is Holly Near.
Yeah.
And recently PBS had a whole show on her and her life and her involvement in the many social movements, including the United States, Central America, and in Chile as well. So she's Holly. Another one that, she's another one that for me is someone that I appreciate listening to her music.
It's raining in Boston. It's been raining since I left LA. The cold's in my bones so bad. I want to be on my. On the fields will be covered with snow, under blue skies and starry nights, the dance of the northern lights. So daydream me home and cradle me soft in its glow. Sit at a table, just a whisper from me. Their hands and their eyes hold each other so tenderly. And I guess that they've got a home. So daydream me home, cradle me soft in its glow. Dawn slowly creeps through the window where I lay my. Alone again in one more strange bed. Another day, another plane, another show. But when I leave the Carolinas, I'm heading for snow. So daydream me home, cradle me soft. Daydream me home, cradle me soft in its glow. It's raining in Boston.
As we are playing music from different groups, different regions, unknown, lesser known, activist-oriented singers, musicians to our group. So that's something that you can contact CJSF about. CJSF is cjsf.ca. You can stream it anywhere in the world. If you have a real radio, you can find it at 90.1 FM in the Vancouver area. So if you have a word or a comment about this show, you can send it to me, Sister C. I am SISTAC at gmail.com. And we'll look forward to you being with us again next week at 10. And when they ask me what time it is, I say it's always love time, poem time.
Love time, poem time, love time, poem time, love time, poem time, time for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time, time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time, time for poems, poets and singers, time to untie all life's ringers. Poem time, love time, time for you to reveal to me, unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace, rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words, place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time, love time. Love time, poem time, times for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time, times for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time, poem time, love time, time for poems, poets, singers, time to untie all life's ringers. Time for you to reveal to me, unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace, rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words, place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time, poem time, love time, love time, poem time, poem time, love time, love time, poem time, poem time, love time, love time, poem time.